Zigzag and One, a place where we honestly discuss how to navigate the zigs and zags in our crazy lives. Expect heartwarming stories, some laughter, and maybe a few tears as we embrace life's challenges and choose joy over a momentary defeat. Today, we will hear from someone whose life has had some unexpected turns, but chose to keep moving forward. What did they learn? Some valuable life lessons. Zigs and zags are also a part of our host, Melanie Brown's journey. She too had to find the determination to never give up. What are we waiting for? Let's dive in.
Thanks so much for joining me for today's episode of the Zigzag in One podcast. I'm your host, Melanie Brown. Ever feel like you face one zigzag after another? My guest, Kim McBrayer, felt that way too, when her professional life, her family life, and her personal life imploded. For several years, Kim struggled to make sense of it all. She leaned hard on her faith, feeling God's strength, and learning the antidote to self-pity is gratitude. Kim is a recent widow, Cassidy's mom, and mom to her warrior son, Carson, who passed away from osteosarcoma. She's also the owner of Space Cadets, which helps clients with closet designs and their organizational needs. You'll find her out enjoying nature and the highways in her RV when she's not working. Kim, make sure you invite me on one of those trips. I'm eager for you to hear my conversation with Kim McBrayer, so join us. I am so excited to have my new friend, Kim McBrayer, with me today. It is not a Zoom. It's an in-person interview. I'm so excited to see you across from me.
Yes, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, Kim.
Thank you.
Yes. So when you sent me all of the information you did about your story, I have to say, you face a lot of zigzags, and they all seem to intersect. So I'm interested in hearing where all these zigzags started.
Oh, goodness. I think it's a perfect word for my life, too, to describe it as a zigzag, because it's something that, to me, it's almost been a full circle, but it's also zigzagged up to that full circle. I've been through an experience that I think very few people really could define as anything easy. I guess just to kind of give an overview, I'm a business owner. I've had ups and downs with my business. I am a mom, and I've had ups and downs or zigzags with my children. And I've been married 2 times, and both of those have zigzagged all over the place too.
Yes.
So pretty much everything within the context of my personal life and professional life has been a little bit chaotic and crazy. And something certainly I've had to find ways to overcome. So to get, I guess, more specific, I started a business 20 years ago, and I had to close it and start over and rebuild it from the ground up. That has been a challenge. At the same time I was doing that, I was going through a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an incredibly difficult journey. And then also, my son was diagnosed with cancer.
Wow.
All within the same year.
That is a lot to juggle all at one time.
Yes, there is no doubt. It was, it was one of those years that just kind of brings you to your knees and you're not sure you're going to survive.
Yes.
Everything that, that kind of made me feel like who I was, you know, my identity as a mom, as a business owner, as a wife, everything, was just kind of burned down to the ground. And certainly it's been a challenge to, guys, I guess, kind of rise from the ashes of all of that.
Yes.
And reinvent myself. And then as a part of the reinvention of that, I reunited with my high school sweetheart. And so that's why I say it's full circle.
Yes.
Because we came back together again after over 20 years of being apart. Interestingly enough, I always thought I would marry him. But I didn't expect it to be so long and late in my life. But we got married after our divorces and spent almost 10 years together before he passed away.
Goodness.
So yeah, it's been a journey, to say the least.
So let's talk about your faith through all of this.
I would not have survived it without it. God has been my comforter, my solace, my rock, my source of everything. He has picked me up and carried me when I couldn't walk myself. He's never, ever abandoned me through any of this. And I've clung to him because I had nothing else to cling to at that point. But, you know, when you realize that that's all you have, you also realize that that's all you need. And so he has been everything to me.
I like how you say that. Go back for a minute and talk about when everything kind of imploded or burned to the ground, I guess is the wording that you used. What was going through your mind emotionally and then also mentally and spiritually that broke you down? And then I know for most people that go through very difficult circumstances, you come to the end of yourself and God kind of points out things. What kind of things did you learn during that period?
Oh gosh, there were so many. You know, I would never have ever wanted this kind of an experience to be the things that taught me life lessons. But to say that I came through this and I can look back now and I feel like I'm a better person because of those obstacles that I had to overcome, you know, something was redeemed out of the negative. I think that's been some of the comfort that I've received is being able to look at the person I was before all of these and the person I am today and recognize that there's a unique and distinct difference, that nothing else could have taught me the same things. Nothing else could have framed me and produced the person that I am today. I just hate that it took so many difficult circumstances, you know, to form me and mold me. But I also am very happy about the person that I've become. And so for the first time in, I just turned 50 last year. And so, you know, the first time in 50 years, I can honestly say, I like me.
And yes.
It's been a product of those experiences, those journeys through the valley and literally the valley of death, you know, for me to walk through those and to gain the perspective and to, I guess, develop the intimacy that I have with the Lord now, just recognizing that he never, ever left me in the middle of all that. You know, in the beginning of those things, as everything kind of started to burn down, I was angry. Of course I was angry. I was this. And how could this be happening? And why is this? And I questioned God. And why would you let this happen? Why would you take a 17-year-old boy and take his life? You know, I blamed him for so much of these things. Why would you let my marriage in divorce? Why would you let my business that I had built up and took such great enthusiasm, and it's a caring service industry. So, you know, we help people. So I couldn't understand why it was, you know, being damaged as well. I'm doing some good things. And so why am I being punished? And so there were a lot of questions like that, that really, I guess, kept me awake at night. It made me wonder, made me question everything about what I had been taught, what I had believed. And it's been a long journey back to, I guess, having a foundation, or, you know, I guess back to the foundation I had already in place. But it's been that full circle coming back to that place where I can really stand on that on solid ground again and believe and know and trust. Because obviously when you're hit with this many things, you have to wonder why. And God, do you not love me? You know, are all these promises really true?
And I hear what you're saying, because it's hard not to ask those questions. I didn't hear you blaming God, but I think it's very human of us to ask why.
Right.
But I know from your story and know the little time that we've spent together that you didn't stay stuck there. What was it that caused you to say, what's happened to me has been awful, but I cannot live there? And I can't live in defeat. So what was it that caused that to happen?
You know, I think there's this thing called hope.
Yes. I like hope.
Hope is really the only thing that will pull us back up out of the miry clay and help us to get up and walk again. Believing that tomorrow is going to be a better day. And even if it's not on this side, it's going to be on the other side. That there is no question whatsoever, I have hope for a better tomorrow on the other side after this lifetime.
Yes.
And I mean, Bible promises us we are going to suffer. We're going to have a difficult time here because we're not of this world. And having that confidence that I know I'm meant for much better places, but this is just temporary. Everything that I'm experiencing here is just temporary. And I think that hope has produced that resilience within me, being able to get back up. I had a friend of mine actually describe me as like, you know, the clown that you know, kind of the punching bag clown that you just hit and knocks
yes.
over and it bounces back up.
Yes.
They said, that's what you're kind of like. Like you take one down and then you just pop back up again. And I've often been asked, how in the world do you get up out of bed every morning? And I say to them, what other choice did I really have? And obviously, there was another choice.
Yes, there is, because there are plenty of people
right.
that do that. And no blame or
exactly.
fussing at them or any of that. But
and
there
no
are
shame,
people.
No guilt.
No, absolutely not.
But I'm also wanting to tell them, there were days that I didn't get up out of bed. There were days that I laid there and I just said, I just want to stop eating. I just want this all to end. The pain was so intense. You know, Carson was my whole life. My kids, Cassidy, both of them, they're just everything
mm-hmm.
for me. And so to have one of them taken from me like this with, you know, it's just, I couldn't imagine my life another day without him here on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, there were a lot of days I just lay there and couldn't get up. But, you know, at some point you recognize I've got to get up again. Obviously having a daughter that came along behind her brother, you know, I needed to get up for her. I needed to get up for my family. I needed to get up for me. I needed to get up for the rest of my purpose here on this planet, because my time is not over yet. So clearly there's something else I'm supposed to do. And believing that there is a genuine intention and purpose for everything that we experience, that it will be redeemed one way or the other, we're going to be able to find that if I keep going. And so I think, you know, having that hope for better days has really allowed me to have that resilience. One of the things, too, that I believe that has been a very valuable tool in that whole process for me, recognizing the value of gratitude.
Yes.
That,
it's powerful.
That, to me, has been the lifeblood of everything that I do. And it's interesting because the year that Carson was going through cancer, a friend of mine was posting on Facebook, and it was her attitude of gratitude journal, and she did it every day, which was really cool, except that it really ticked me off. Quite honest. You know, she's got this beautiful family, she's got all her kids, and her life just seems so perfect. Looking at it from the outside, and I'm thinking, well, of course she's grateful. Look how great her life is.
Yeah, looking from the outside.
Looking from the outside. And what was interesting, I would see these posts every day, and some days I would read them, and some days I would literally, like, just flip across them with anger. I don't want to read that. I don't want to see that. And then she sent me a book, and it was her life story that she had just written for, you know, friends and family, and I saw way deeper into her life, and it challenged me to recognize that it's not always what it seems like from the outside.
Amen.
And there's a part of this that because of her gratitude, she was able to overcome the negativity and the struggles and the storms in her life. And so the next year, I vowed to do the same thing she had done. And so every single day, most days I could do it. There were days that I had to kind of run them together because I had to make up for the couple days I was in bed. But, you know, even if I got up and rode, I'm thankful for oxygen. I'm thankful for sunshine. I'm thankful for rain. But it wasn't that hard to find things I was really grateful for, because even after Carson was gone, there were still so many good things that were happening in my life. Sometimes I had to look a bit harder, but I could always find something to be grateful for. Even if it was the fact that I got to be his mom, you know, I mean, that was easy to be grateful for. I had 17 years with this amazing young man. And I got to have someone call me mom and love me the way that he loved me and get to love him the way that I loved him. And so what was interesting about Carson, well, let me back up. So gratitude is, I had done some research and reading on this. And like I said, I did this journal every single day of the attitude of gratitude. And I found that it changed me drastically. By the end of the year, I just saw life in a different perspective. And I could see the other side of the coin all of a sudden. You know, for everything that happens that's bad, there's something that's good happening too. And we would have, like, for example, I remember tornadoes coming through. And you would think, this is horrible. This is terrible. But there's also rebirth that happens after tornadoes. New houses get built.
Yes.
New lives get built. I remember You know, that happened at home not too long ago. And driving back into that same area now 10 years later, you look at it and you say, this is amazing what came after the tornado, devastated. And so I think it's always an important thing to remember that rebirth happens after death happens.
Yes.
Spring comes after winter. And so we always need to kind of be searching, what is the other side of this coin? So if there's something bad happening, what is the good thing happening at the same time? And it's that to me has been a valuable lesson. And I read that gratitude is the antidote to self-pity.
Oh, I like that.
Isn't that good?
That's
gratitude
very good.
Is the antidote to self-pity. And of course, given the circumstances I've been through, self-pity would be a very easy party to throw.
Of course it would.
So each day I get up and I start my morning with this expression a friend taught me. She said, instead of waking up in the morning and saying, good God, it's morning, she says, good morning, God.
Yes.
And I did that. And I'd still do that because it's life-changing. It totally reframes your perspective on your day.
It does. I start my day with, thank you, God, for a new day.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Because even if yesterday was a bad day, which sometimes it is, mm-hmm. what had a pretty rough day last week. And, you know, the next day I woke up and things weren't drastically different yeah. or improved, but it was a new day with new opportunities and new possibilities.
Absolutely.
And by the time I went to bed, I thought it was better. Problems still didn't go away, mm-hmm. but there were so many, as you said, so many great things to be grateful for during the day. And it helps us, as you're talking about this, gratitude helps us have a different perspective. It focuses on the good because I feel like we are inclined to see the bad.
Absolutely. I think that's very true. It's just within our nature
yes.
to focus on the bad things. And, you know, I think it's a shift in our psyche to be able to start focusing on the good things. And before you know it, you start looking at more things and you see the good. And that's why that exercise was so important to me. What was interesting, Carson had this unique ability. He always saw good. And even in the midst of cancer, he still saw so many beautiful things. Mm. And I remember we were walking into Children's Hospital one time and he looks over at me and he says, Mom, why am I going through this? And I said, baby, I wish I knew the why. But I try to focus more on the what. What am I learning? What is this teaching me? What am I supposed to do with, you know, this experience? And I said, but in my Bible, years and years before this happened, I had written in the margin my why next to 2 Corinthians chapter 1 that talks about we suffer and the Lord gives us comfort so that then we can share that comfort with others who are also going through suffering. So that's my why. And he said, I like that. And so I think he found himself encouraging other people. You know, he spent time with younger kids and other people that were suffering, other capacities, other situations. But he always tried to encourage them. And you look at this kid that is clearly not doing well, and he's over there encouraging someone else. And I'll never forget that. But one day he was talking to me and he said, Mom, I've decided something. Either way, I'm okay. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, you know, if this is cured, then I get to stay here and be with all of you. So I'm okay then. And if it's not cured, I get to go to heaven and be with Jesus. So either way, I'm okay.
I love that.
And so that became my mantra. You know, I started telling myself, okay, regardless of what happens, either way, I'm going to be okay.
Yes.
And it was so significant because Carson and I had played this game going in, like, through his childhood. He would get in the car and carpool, and I would say, so how what's up, Joe? And he'd say, not much, Schmo. And we would try to play these rhyming games. And it was always this funny thing of, you know, like whoever couldn't come up with the next, even if it was a made up word, if you couldn't come up with something, you lost the game. And he became a songwriter and singer. And so I think that kind of probably helped him.
Of course it did.
Rhyme things. But, you know, here he is rhyming, either way, I'm okay. And I was like, look at you, you know, you're still rhyming. So after he passed away, I began to talk to people and, you know, they would ask me, how are you? And they would, you know, try to get me to open up. And I began to say this and I didn't even realize what I was doing. But I said, well, I decided that I'm glad for what I had, not sad for what I lost. And one day it hits me. I had said that so many times, and it hits me. I'm rhyming too.
Yes, you are.
I'm glad for what I had, not sad for what I've lost. And so I said that, you know, for the next several months. Many times people would ask me. And what that is really the root of gratitude. I'm glad for what I have.
Yes.
You know, I'm taking this side of the coin, not this side of the other side of the coin. I'm taking and focusing on what I had and being glad for that. And then one day I felt like the Lord was talking to me and he said, "You haven't lost, Carson." Well, yes, I have, Lord. Look around. Is he here? No. And so we had this little kind of argument. I do that with God.
And I do too.
You know, sometimes I just have to be mean. And in his loving, fatherly ways, he's like, "No. Do you know where Carson is?" "Well, yes, God, he's with you." "Then he's not lost." And that felt like this big slap across my face, because you're right. We use this word, lost, as if we've no clue where our loved one is.
I haven't thought about that before, but you're right.
So I can't say I've lost him. If you lose something, you don't know where it is.
Exactly.
And so he's not lost. I'm confident he's with the Lord. And so I had to change my mantra.
I was going to ask if you did. That was my next question.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm still working on it, because this one's not as easy to come up with. But I said, you know, I'm glad for what I had, not sad for what I don't. Because I don't have Carson. I didn't get to enjoy graduating high school and college and, you know, all the empty nest stuff that my friends were going through. I didn't get to do that. I didn't get to experience him getting married and having grandchildren and all those things that I wanted to. So I have lost an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I have lost an experience. I have lost a relationship that's no longer active. But I haven't lost Carson. And I think that's given me comfort to recognize that.
I think that is beautiful, because it, again, brings back your word hope.
Yeah.
Hope of seeing him again. Let's talk for a minute about your marriage, your second marriage, and what transpired with the struggles, the zigzags that you faced in that marriage, and then how he was injured and how all of that transpired.
Right. So Rhett and I were high school sweethearts. I saw him when I was in fourth grade, went home and picked him out in the yearbook, and thought to myself, I'm going to marry him someday.
Mm.
I fell in love with him right away. We dated through high school into college, and things just didn't work out the way that I thought they would. We talk about zigzags. We played quite a few. You know, it was a cat and mouse game. I wanted him to chase me. He wanted me to chase him. And neither one of us ended up chasing. And so we missed red signals. And we ended up married to two other people. And through the course of life, we actually ended up working together for a few years during the next era of our time together, which was really unique and special. But we never shared our feelings. I thought he was over me. I thought he never really cared about me. Mm. So I never opened up about my true feelings for him. We honored our commitments to our marriages.
Mm-hmm.
And a few years later, we reconnected again. And at this point, both of us were at the end of our marriage. And so we reunited, got married, and began a life together. I knew he had a drinking problem.
Yes.
But I did not understand what that really meant. I had never been around addiction. I had never been around anyone who really drank. And so, you know, it just was kind of a foreign topic to me. And unfortunately, I've also had a pretty strong judgment against addicts, that I thought they were making choices and that it was something that they could control.
Mm.
I didn't understand the full gravity of the disease portion.
Right. And it is a disease.
It is, without a doubt. And certainly I have had that proven to me. It was a decade of happy, really beautiful, wonderful days and beyond descriptive hell on the other days.
Hmm.
So, sometimes those would happen on the same day. The journey of a life with an addict is not one I would wish on anybody.
Yes.
But the love that Brett and I shared I wish everybody could understand and have that and touch that, because it was just incredible. So I think that was certainly called into test when, you know, things got rough for me, because there were many days I wanted to leave and just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
But then my heart would jump back up and say, but, you know, you can't. And many people ask me, why do you stay with him? And I would tell them, you know, there's two outcomes here. He's either going to beat this thing and get sober, or he's going to die.
Yes.
And I want to be there for whichever one that is. And so I couldn't leave him.
How long into the your marriage did he have his accident?
So in we were married in 2011,
mm-hmm.
and he had a lot of challenges. He was in and out of the hospital several times with just the nature of the disease, and he was trying to get sober.
Mm-hmm.
He worked really hard at getting sober, but couldn't, and had been on a good run, but had a situation come up, and he relapsed in 2019, and he had just turned 50, and we had a wonderful date. A few weeks later, he relapsed and fell down a flight of stairs.
Oh, goodness.
And so I found him at the bottom of the stairs. He was unconscious and had aspirated. And so I had to do CPR on him.
Mm.
We got him to the emergency room. He was in a coma for 3 weeks on life support.
Goodness.
They did not think he was going to make it. They did multiple surgeries. And, you know, we really did. We thought he was not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in his room praying, and I felt like the Lord was saying, he's not done yet. And so my church showed up, and we prayed over him. We sang songs. We just continued to believe that this was going to be a wonderful experience, you know, that something was going to happen and everything would be good. The next day, he started to come to.
Wow.
From his coma.
Wow.
And we recognized that he's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So a few weeks later, he moved to the rehab place, and he began to learn to walk and talk and feed himself and dress himself all over again. And we, that was a journey in and of itself. But for 3 months, he lived at the rehab center. And he came home, spent 3 or 4 months. He came home in a wheelchair, made it to the walker, and before you knew it, he was basically running laps around us. You know, we couldn't keep up with him.
That's amazing.
It really was. I mean, I felt like I had a front seat to a miracle. We weren't done yet. He ended up having a grand mal seizure, and traumatic brain injuries tend to have a little bit lower threshold for those, and there was some medication that got mixed up and changed up and things like that. And so anyway, he had a grand mal seizure and did more brain damage. And from that point forward, you know, he was in and out of the hospital. Well, really, he was in the hospital minus 3 days for the next 7 months.
Goodness.
And
this is all during COVID.
Well, actually, this was leading up to COVID.
So okay.
So he went into the hospital September, came home actually for the month of November. I'm sorry, the month of December. And he loved Christmas, and mm-hmm. so I wanted to keep him at home and have him be there for the holidays. And so I did everything I could to keep him home.
But yes.
You know, I wasn't sleeping. There were very difficult nights that I'd wake up and, you know, from a 15-minute nap, and he's up pacing the house. So it was a very difficult season of my life. And I look back now, and I honestly don't know how I did it except by the grace of God, because it's just not even humanly possible what we were going through. But Christmas night, he went into the hospital. So this would have been 2019. And he didn't come home. And he passed away in April of 2020.
I'm so sorry. That's a journey right there.
It is. And, it taught me so much about the strength that I had within, that I never really even imagined that I could do the things that I was doing, because
yes,
my business had exploded at this time. And so I was trying to keep up with that and trying to raise a teenager and take care of him. And I was his caregiver. I had sitter, 8 hours a day, but that was it. Otherwise it was up to me. And so I look back on that now and I think, look at what I was able to do and what fueled me, trying to understand that. And the truth is, it was love. I just was so intensely in love with this man that I didn't care how hard it was. I was going to serve him. I was going to love him. And I was going to be there. And COVID struck in March. And he was, of course, in the hospital at this point. I was having a hard time finding a nursing home for him because he was too young.
Yes.
And also with a traumatic brain injury, they don't like to take those kinds of patients. And so I was fortunate 2 weeks prior to his passing, about 10 days prior, got him into a nursing home. And so I have to share this part with you because this is such a, I think, this is my story now. I'd been praying that God would allow me to have one more night with him because it hadn't been, it had been months since he had been at home. And so I just asked if I only had one more night. I just wish I could have one more night. And they called me from hospice and said he's actively passing away. And so I got to the nursing home. They quarantined off a section for me to be able to go in. I got there at 7 o'clock that morning on a Tuesday, and he passed away at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday.
Wow.
And I realized God gave me my one more night.
I got chill bumps. Kim, I got chill bumps over here.
I know. It's just one of those things. Of course, he was in the morphine coma by then, didn't wake up, but
he knew you were there.
He knew I was there.
Yes.
And I got to be with him as he passed away. And so several nurses came in throughout the night, and I talked to them, and, I just prayed, and I played our love songs and just sat there and held his hand. And at one point in the middle of the night, I fell into what I would describe as a deep trance. Because the entire room went the brightest light I've ever seen in my life, but it wasn't blinding. It was peaceful and calm and soothing, and it had this sweet aroma.
Very interesting.
I could, it felt palpable. And I'm looking around thinking, okay, this must be heaven, but I'm not the one dying. Why am I here? What's going on? And I see this crowd of people start moving toward me, and they stop about 100 yards away from me, but it's all these silhouettes. And I'm just standing there looking at them, trying to figure out if I know anybody or where am I, what's happening, trying to make sense of it all in my rationale mind. And I recognize Carson.
Oh, goodness.
Standing there. And standing next to him was Jesus. And I gasped. It took my breath away. And I remember being very much in the room, but very much in this other space. And so I feel Brent next to me. I can still hear him breathing. And I feel him start to move away from me. He gets about half, and I see the back of his head. He comes into the picture. And he gets about halfway between me and this group of people. And he turns around and he looks at me. And he's been made whole. He's healed completely. And he grins from ear to ear that, he's just glowing. He's got this beautiful smile. And he waves at me like Forrest Gump, the big grin and waving like crazy. And like, are you seeing this? And I'm going, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I get to witness this. This is amazing. And he turns around and he starts to take off running at top speed. And just at the moment he would cross the finish line, I snap out of it. And I back in the room and I'm looking at his body and I realize he's making a different sound. And there's a nurse at the foot of the bed and she's saying, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to startle you. I just wanted to say, it's nice to meet you. And I'm looking at the clock and I'm trying to make sense. And I'm thinking, oh, it must be shift change. She's leaving. What's going on? What's that sound? And I'm trying to put all these things together in this very split second, And I looked at him and I said, did he just breathe his last breath? And she reaches for his arm. She picks up and checks his pulse. And as she's doing that, I feel this yanking out of my chest.
Wow.
And it's like all these strings are just being yanked out of my chest. And it took my breath away. And I reached up and grabbed my chest and just held my heart. And I said, yeah, he's gone. I just felt him leave. And she laid his arm down and she said, yes, ma'am, he's gone.
What an incredible opportunity for you to experience his transition to heaven.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine that would have to give you so much comfort.
It does. There is
especially
no
to see your baby boy.
I know. I mean, I got the whole thing. You know, I got Jesus and Carson and Brett, all of them. I got to see all of them. And so, you know, the first thing that went through my mind was absent from the body, present with the Lord.
Yes.
He instantly crossed the finish line and his body gave up here. You know, at the second he's with the Lord, he's not here anymore. And it was such a cool experience that.
That is extremely cool.
And so.
You have to be grateful for that.
It's my comfort. It's the thing that gives me hope. It gives, I mean, I don't just believe that there's a heaven. I know it.
Well,
it's full on
yes.
It's in knowledge now. I've seen it firsthand. And it's just incredible. And quite honestly, I was disappointed I didn't get to stay there. It was just so amazing.
Yes.
And I long for that now. But how awesome, you know, to get to be a part of that and to watch Brett run into heaven.
Yes.
And be healed.
Thank you for sharing that. That wasn't part of the script. And so I wasn't expecting that. And chill bumps still. Kim, goodness. We do have to bring this to a close, though. If you would, share your one takeaway.
My one takeaway. Gosh, let's see. I think it's to live every single day that you possibly are given here on this planet and make the most of it. And take advantage of all of the things that life gives you and be grateful.
Yes.
And recognize that grief is a part of living because we love big, we grieve big. I grieve big, but I also know that it's because I loved big. And it's just a part of the human experience. There's no right way, wrong way to do it. It's just part of it. And so you move through it. Grief has become a friend of mine. He's a constant companion. But also love is.
That's so beautiful.
Thank you.
It has been such a pleasure to spend time with you today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for letting me share my story. I hope it blesses someone else.
When I interviewed Kim, I expected a heart-wrenching story and a fighter attitude. Well, as you heard, I got what I expected and more. She endured so much heartache and pain, yet Kim found joy in her life by choosing to be grateful for the good she saw all around her. Learning gratitude is the antidote to self-pity, is the road she continues to travel. Could gratitude really be that powerful? I think so. No, I know so. May I encourage you to be aware of all the many good things, people, and experiences you encounter every day and to express gratefulness for them. Your life will never be the same. Thank you for listening to my interview with Kim McBrayer. Please make sure to share it with your friends. And if you enjoy this podcast, would you take a minute to leave a review? It would mean the world to me, and it helps others find this podcast. As we end today, remember, when life zigs and zags, you know it will, keep moving forward.